This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Sibylla Mann. Today we talk with a man who remembers things about Kalamazoo that most of us only know as history. Carl Bussimo will turn 93 in May. He was born in Kalamazoo to parents who had emigrated with their families from the Netherlands. Like many in Kalamazoo in the early 20th century, Bussima's mother's parents farmed celery. Bussima studied at Central High School, now Chenery Auditorium, and he fought in Europe in the last year of World War II. Bussima and I talked about his life in Kalamazoo and his time overseas at his home in Kalamazoo in February. At the moment, he's living in Grand Rapids. Tell me a little more about where your family came from.
Well, my dad's family grew up in the Netherlands. My dad was 9 years old when he came, and he was one of 14 kids in that family. And my mother came to Kalamazoo because there were family members living in Kalamazoo when they came this way, and so they chose to go to Kalamazoo to have some relatives that had arrived here earlier.
So they all ended up in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. Yes. I grew up working with two grandfathers. They were both farmers. One was a celery farmer and the other one was a vegetable farmer. And they sold their products mostly to markets. The market people would buy the product. So like I told you earlier, my school day was finished at 3 in the afternoon from high school, but then I had to hurry home because I had to work on the farm.
And so you worked on both the celery and the vegetable farms?
Yeah, both farmers. Celery farmers had to be in that soft black dirt, and a vegetable farmer worked on high ground where there was no soft stuff. As it was a different working condition.
Was one easier than the other?
One was hotter than the other. That muck, that black dirt really reflected the sun in the summertime.
And that was the celery field?
Yes, that was the celery fields, yeah. It was a long process from the time it was planted to the time it was harvested. And my day, we bleached all the celery. It didn't come out green like celery was when it started. When it matured, it would mature between rows of boards on each side of the plants, of the whole row, and we'd cut it out that way, and it would be yellow or yellow-green, a light color. And nowadays, if you buy groceries, you go to the store and you buy big stalks and they're green. It didn't taste good to us going from yellow to green.
The yellow celery tasted better.
Sweeter. Yes. I went to school all the time, but I graduated in June 42, and instead of getting a job or further, I stayed right on the celery farm. And instead of going back to school in September, I worked a month or so longer in the celery field. And from there, I stayed locally by hiring out to KVP, Kalamazoo Vegetable Parchment. They made paper. So I was a part of the Celery City, Michigan, and also Paper City, Michigan.
So you spent every summer of your childhood in...
Every summer. On 4th of July, the Muhlman family that you mentioned rented a place at Little Long Lake. There was a road between Little Long Lake and Gull Lake. But our Muhlman's family rented a place from people that owned land on Little Long Lake, very small lake.
So that was kind of a special holiday after all the time in the fields.
Yeah, that was, we got washed clean once a year going into a Little Log Lake.
Finally got all the dirt off, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course my parents from both sides of the family were from the Reformation people, leaving the Catholic Church and becoming Protestants. And so That was a very important part of our week. Bible class, church worship services, and doing good jobs and helping move the good news of the gospel into the ears of people near and far. Supported by missionaries far away, and did it locally from house to house.
And you spoke Dutch with both your sets of grandparents?
Oh, yeah. They were, Netherlands has one common language, the school language. But those countries, every province had their own dialect. So when I went into the army and we invaded, we came up through the Netherlands, and those people had a hard time understanding me because they had a dialect just opposite the dialect of where my family came from. In the military, I was in the southern part of the Netherlands, and all my family came from the northern part. So the northern part had some German in it.
Well, where did you go to school before you got to Old Central?
In the half mile south on Westage was a two-room schoolhouse, grades kindergarten through eighth grade. And we had two teachers, one for the younger kids, one for the older. And after they finished the eighth grade, through the school system, we were allowed to go to because in the country there was no high school. We would go to a junior high for the ninth grade in those days. And then high school was 10, 11, and 12. And our school was Kalamazoo Central High School from out where I lived. 4 miles to school.
How'd you get there?
Bicycle. What cars the parents had didn't amount to much. So.
Did you like school?
Some of it I liked, and I was a good student, but I didn't have any motivators at home to go on to higher education, although I did become part of a business college after I returned home from service, from Army service. And so I got a good education in accounting, but I liked that work as well as working with my hands. But my hands worked finally. Started there in January, Parsons Business College, and worked until about May, and the nice warm weather. There was no place that schoolroom for me, typing and business English and all those subjects, relating subjects. I had an opportunity to move into a building company, home builders, and so ended up being a carpenter almost all of my life.
I know you said you spent your summers in the fields. What did you do after school when you were a teenager?
Naughty stuff.
Well, now you have to elaborate.
No, just boy stuff.
Just hanging out, or?
Yeah, we would tell jokes under the corner power pole, electric power pole. It had a light up there, and you could stand and talk in the light of at a corner pole in the country, you know.
Did you have any free time as a teenager, or were you like pretty busy with the farming and things at home?
My free time included church-related things that took a lot of time. They figured a knowledge of the Bible in relationship with the Lord Jesus was the most important, more than any schooling for future living here on earth. So it was a Christian upbringing that was strict. There were many things we could do that was naughty.
The services you attended, were they in English or Dutch?
When I started going to church as a boy of, you know, school age, the morning services were in Dutch, which I didn't understand. But the afternoon was also Dutch. The evening service was English.
You mentioned that after you graduated high school, you worked at the Kalamazoo Vegetable Parchment Plant. So what was your job there?
Making paper. I didn't really manufacture. I was toward the finish end of the product, which is finished paper, and we had to make it marketable size-wise and things like that. And I did that until Uncle Sam got me at the end of the year. I only had about 3 months of working in the paper mills.
Before we talk about what happened when Uncle Sam got you, what was the mill, was it loud? Did it smell like anything in particular? I'm just wondering what it was like.
Well, I worked in the wax finishing, so you had a smell of wax. They waxed the paper and made it marketable by cutting it to various sizes and wrapping it and sending it to the people who used it.
And KVP was a huge plant.
Yeah, it was. It was livelihood for a lot of people. Yeah. And paper making was for all of Kalamazoo, the other paper mills also. KVP was on my end of the city of Kalamazoo, or that part of the Talent County, and so we didn't go to the other paper companies. We just went to the one closest to us.
And by that time, did you have a car, or were you still riding your bike?
I was riding my bike all the way through high school. And at the end of my high school year, I looked at the advertisement in the paper, and I ended up buying a, that was in 42, I ended up buying a 32 Chevy. And that became my car, and that's the one I took girls riding in.
So you graduated from high school, and you worked a few months at KVP, and then you were drafted?
Yeah, at the end of 42, I was drafted. I was sworn in December of 42.
Well, when you got drafted, did you have a choice of what branch of the military you went into?
Yeah, we did. Up until that time, to get into the Navy, you had to enlist. You weren't drafted. If you were drafted, you could add your choice. And you passed the physical, you could go either way. And Bud, or Wesley, my friend, he passed. He could have gone either way. But they didn't want me in the Navy because I was colorblind. So we both went in the Army.
And the Army didn't mind that you were colorblind?
No, because we didn't use signals by flags. That's what the Navy does. They're out there in those big, vast oceans. They could see the flags, we get messages that way. We had long lines, telephone lines, and so on land, you know.
So what happened after you were drafted and you went into the Army? Where did they send you first?
We had a point right close to home, Fort Custer, between here and Battle Creek. But they sent a whole bunch of us from Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana. We all started our trip down to the bottom part of Texas for training in anti-aircraft. So I went from Kalamazoo to Chicago, spent 2 days, and then got out of training. We went all the way down through the states, way to the bottom of Texas. That's where our basic training was for the military.
You had a friend of yours, Wesley, who joined or who was drafted at the same time as you, but he didn't actually make it to Europe. So can you tell me about what happened to Wesley?
Yeah, we were down in Texas. We were playing war, you know, learning war. And we were a mobile outfit, so we were got from one place to another with trucks, pulling our big guns, and on maneuvers, training maneuvers, the truck that Wesley was, he was in C battery. He didn't stay right with me in B battery. You go where they tell you to go, and that's, he went to C battery, and the truck he was on, traveling from on maneuvers, during the night, no lights, a very narrow road in Louisiana, and the driver got too close to the edge and rolled the truck, and he was killed in that rollover.
And he was how old then?
19, yeah.
Was he your closest friend that you had in the Army?
Yeah, we started school as kindergarten and went all the way through that 9 years of schooling. Then we both went to Kalamazoo Central, and our classes separated us somewhat there. But we were reunited with age. We were drafted at the same time.
So you finished up training, and then you said you went to England first?
We got off from a ship, a passenger ship out of New Jersey, and landed in Scotland to avoid the submarines, the German submarines. But then by train, we went from Scotland down into England. And there we, as an organization, we got organized and got on a boat called the LST, landing craft, for big items like trucks and trailers. And that way we crossed the English Channel into the continent of Europe.
This is West Southwest. We're speaking with 92-year-old Carl Bussema about his life in Kalamazoo and his service in Europe during the Second World War. Coming up, we'll hear about Bussema's experiences in the Army, including his time in the Netherlands, his parents' homeland. But first, this is WMUK's Spring Pledge Drive. Here's how you can pledge your support.
Thanks, Avila. Hi, I'm Stephen Williams, WMUK's General Manager, and joining me is Kim Willis, our Development Director. This is the final day of our 2017 Spring Membership Drive, and we're excited as we near our goal for this campaign.
And just as a reminder, our goal is $164,000, which will go a long way towards making sure the local journalism you've come to rely on from WMUK stays strong and independent. In the last year alone, your pledge dollars have helped to pay for critical reporting here in Southwest Michigan and some fascinating discussions.
Like the interview that we're hearing right now on West Southwest as host Sevilla Mann talks with a 92-year-old veteran from Kalamazoo who has lived a very interesting life and has seen tremendous changes in this town over the decades.
This is programming worthy of support. Please make a pledge right now at WMUK.org. Our goal for this morning is $5,000, and you can help us make sure we surpass that goal. Once again, we're asking you to renew your membership or become a new member to this station to help pay for programs like West Southwest and Morning Edition.
As we wrap up this final day of our spring membership drive, I hope that you will pause to reflect on the hundreds of hours of award-winning local reporting that is done by WMUK's news staff. Your dollars assure that all the right questions continue to be asked and answered on important issues to our community.
I think you can agree that quality reporting is critical for our region. You can do your part to support it. Please make your contribution by going to WMUK.org. Click on that donate button at the top of the page.
Again, that's WMUK.org. You'll be doing your part to keep local journalism in Kalamazoo alive. WMUK.org. Now let's get back to West Southwest with host Sevilla Mann.
We now return to our interview with Kalamazooan and World War II veteran Carl Bussema. Bussema says he landed in France in August 1944, a couple of months after D-Day. By December, the Allies thought the war was winding down, but the Germans thought they could still reverse their fortunes. In Belgium, they launched a major surprise attack. The fight to repel them became known as the Battle of the Bulge, and while the Allies prevailed, they suffered heavy losses. Bussema says he was supposed to go to Belgium that fall, but his orders changed and he went to the Netherlands instead. Not everyone he knew was so fortunate.
The anti-aircraft that trained with us in Texas, they got the job in Belgium to guard a big air supply and an Air Force organization. Bastogne, Belgium, but there was a big battle right at Bastogne. The Germans decided they were going to split the Allied forces, and that was really a bad wartime. Lots of 554 people were killed in that. And so because of the change of orders, instead of going to Bastogne in Belgium, we went right through the country of Belgium into the Netherlands to push the Germans out of Netherlands back into Germany. Otherwise, we didn't have to really do any fighting, except, yeah, that would have been our situation.
You really didn't ever have to shoot at anyone, and they didn't shoot at you?
We just shot at their airplane, yeah. We didn't have to shoot at any bombers, but we had to shoot at fighter planes.
Where were you sleeping in the winter of 1945? Did you stay in buildings?
We had to be careful where we stayed, too. They were booby-trapped a lot, you know.
The buildings were?
Yeah, the Germans made it difficult for those Allies.
So if you came across an empty building, you couldn't just assume that you could stay there?
We could go, but you had to be careful. Yeah, make sure that everything was safe. A lot of people were injured by just going in, you know, opening a door and bang. You didn't know which door was booby-trapped.
Was it hard to stay warm?
Yeah, that Battle of the Bulge, they either froze to death or they got shot. It was that cold.
And you were pretty cold, too.
Yeah, I was, but I had a pup tent, and I had dug out, you know, so you'd be below the top of the ground. And I filled it with a bale of straw and my GI blankets, and I kept from freezing to death that way.
It wasn't very comfortable, though, I imagine.
Oh, you cuddled up in those GI blankets were wool, you know.
So you managed.
Yeah, I survived the cold.
Didn't get any frostbite or anything like that?
No, those people who were involved in that bulge battle, they were out on the streets in Bastogne. So they were freezing to death, as well as bullets.
You came pretty close to that. It was a pretty close miss.
We were 50 miles north of the real action, but they pulled us out of our 9th Army job in the Netherlands for backup to the Bulge Battle. But after this serious part was over, the Germans hightailed it back to Germany. And so we didn't have to fight them at the Battle of the Bulge. But we did leave the Netherlands for a time for backup support, you know. You needed backup. So if your team was losing, you had to have replacements.
Well, I have to wonder, were some of the Dutch people that you met, were they surprised that you spoke Dutch?
Yeah, that I did that well. But I had a mind that worked pretty well. I picked up on things pretty fast. And I had that dialect from my grandparents, you know, that I worked with them. But that was, that dialect that they had was similar to the German, German. They called it Low German or High German, yeah. It wasn't an exact state proper, but you could converse.
Well, what did you use your Dutch for when you were there? Did you just have conversations with people? Was it useful?
Yeah, when we got there, our mode of washing our clothes was a 5-gallon bucket and soaking our clothes in that and doing that ourselves. When we got into the Netherlands, situated with our gun position as a 9th Army guard, we became acquainted with the people, and those people were deprived of a lot of good things because of the war, too. And we became acquainted with at least my gun crew. Became acquainted with the neighborhood Dutch people, and the mother in the home did our washing for us in their wash machines. We'd give them soap. They couldn't buy soap that well. We'd give them our issue of soap. You could wash your own clothes in a bucket, you know.
Must have been nice to have someone doing the laundry.
Yeah. And I myself ate many a meal in a Dutch home by a table with people that lived there. Everybody didn't do that, but this Dutchman did.
And did you tell them about your Dutch background?
We talk about common things like that. One of the first ones I met in the Netherlands, the southern part, he had a little difficult time understanding me, but he spoke the Dutch, and down in the southern part, the province of Limburg, they had a completely different sounding Dutch. But it was all background. We got along. You had to get used to the pronunciation and everything.
So the war ended, and then when did you actually leave Europe?
I can't remember the exact day. It was right at the end of 45. We almost didn't make it back to the States. It was such a rough ocean, terrible out of France. And there were small ships, and we bounced around so much you didn't know if you were going forward or backward first few days in the ocean. But all of a sudden we got past the storm and we sailed into the United States, New York Harbor. Beautiful day. And it was sure nice.
You ended up back at, was it Camp Atterbury?
Yeah. We went to a camp, an army camp in Atterbury for our discharge. And we went to that as long as that took. It didn't take long, a week. And we got on a bus and headed for Kalamazoo.
Well, you married and you raised a family here. You've pretty much been in Kalamazoo since you came back from the Army in 1946.
Yeah. We never left. No, my wife was from Kalamazoo too. She worked for a paper company. That was a big, you know, when we all graduated in 42, there was paper companies galore. They were looking for high school graduates.
Your grandparents were celery farmers on one side, but the celery industry kind of dried up after a while.
Yeah, California and Florida became the big producers. You know, they didn't have challenges with weather like we do.
What do you think of the celery that's for sale in the stores right now?
It's good. Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it's different than what we were used to, but when at first we wouldn't buy that green stuff. Its quality is going up, yeah.
And I'm curious too, since you spoke Dutch with your grandparents, did you say celery or did you say, is it selderij?
No, I don't think we had a Dutch word for celery.
You just said celery like in English.
I think so, yeah. I can't remember calling it anything except celery.
And along those same lines, I was curious, when they pronounced Kalamazoo, did they just say Kalamazoo or did they say it with the Dutch accent?
They'd say Kalamazoo, Kalamazoo. Yeah, that's the way they pronounce it, like they would wanted to say it right. That's the way of pronouncing the A and the L and Mazo. They didn't say zoo, they said zo.
Carl Bussema, thank you so much for your time.
Well, that's what makes life worth living, if you can do something for someone else.
Carl Bussema is 92 years old. He was born and raised in Kalamazoo and came back after he fought in the Second World War. We spoke in February at his home in Kalamazoo. Since then, he's moved to Grand Rapids. You can see a picture of Bussema in his uniform at our website, wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann.